I know you.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Waveframe Series Film Chat, a series where we talk about movies and just a little bit about music. I'm your host, Isaac, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Brian.
That's me.
Yep. I finally wrote out an intro.
That's so good.
And I wrote out more things. Right. Before we kick off this episode, I want to plug our podcast. It's an Instagram page, at Waveframe Pod, where you can stay up to date on our episodes, and we post some fun art. Also, my personal Instagram is at ip.deboer. If you want to follow me on Letterboxd, you can. That's also ip.deboer on Letterboxd, which is a movie review sharing app.
I need to get on that.
And, Brian, any plugs?
No plugs. Just, so I was going to make a bad joke about hair loss, but I thought... It's a podcast. Not yet.
Beware of getting a letterbox because you might use it the rest of your life.
Oh, and see.
You don't always need another one of those things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've never been on Twitter. So maybe this will be my Twitter.
I would say this is way better than Twitter.
Yep.
But here's the dilemma, and you finally met Blake Stott of Stott's Thoughts.
I did. Stott's Thoughts.
Really fun because we saw this movie
live in person
with
Thoughts.
Him. But he doesn't use Letterboxd very often at all, even though he has a Letterboxd, just because there's a lot of reasons, I think, and he would be better at saying them. But it's a little bit like Twitter where it can cause some brain rot.
You can get down a hole.
Exactly. You can get down a hole, or while you're watching a movie, you can be thinking, what's my funny line as my review?
You're doing it for the Letterboxd.
Exactly. You're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for the likes.
For the movie gram.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And honestly, speaking as somebody who has fallen prey to the movie gram logic and the rabbit hole, I have a review that has over 1,000 likes.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, it makes me feel no different. It makes me feel nothing.
You don't feel powerful?
No, because it's not for like a review I'm proud of. It's like one line where I talk about this movie, Who Cloned Tyrone. And it's a pretty fun movie, good movie. You should check it out. It's on Netflix. But I said, John Boyega rocks and the film grain is tasty. And I almost didn't post that review.
Yeah.
So it's like the algorithm is one of the fates where they're just toying with me.
Yeah.
And it chose me that day. And it's almost like spite. So some strategies that I've seen some people do when it comes to Letterboxd is they don't post any star ratings. So they don't say how much they like the movie with stars. They say it with their words, like typed out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is cool. I like that a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm leaning toward that.
Right.
On Letterboxd. Or you could go one further and just use it to log what day you watched a movie on, and you don't even say anything about it.
Okay.
Which I might get there eventually, just because...
Just like a personal movie journal?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which you could do yourself with a journal like I'm holding right now.
Yeah.
But, I might get there someday just because I like to know which day I watched it, how many movies I watched during the month of June or like the whole year and that sort of thing. So
interesting.
It's like Spotify Wrapped for movies at the end of the year.
Yeah, it sounds like it's like Spotify Wrapped and or Rotten Tomatoes for the people.
Yeah.
Or is it like more in depth than just that?
Oh, it's a lot of things, but Rotten Tomatoes for the people is a pretty good way of classifying it, just because you can go to a movie and see the average star rating it has.
Okay.
And honestly, it's more accurate, I would say, than Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
We won't get into Rotten Tomatoes. We can get into that later.
Okay.
I have a bunch of thoughts on Rotten Tomatoes.
All right.
I was a kid in high school who you could say a movie and I would know its Rotten Tomatoes score.
Oh, wow.
Like, with an 80% accuracy rate.
That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in deep
Yeah.
Early.
Yes, yeah. Early. Yes. Before they would like put that sticker on DVDs and Blu-rays and be like, certified fresh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like my friend, he would go and watch me every single class we had, and I would just do like three tabs. I'd go to Empire Online, which is like a movie magazine. Mm-hmm. I'd go to Rotten Tomatoes, and I'd go to IMDb. And yeah. I would just like see what's up.
I don't want to take us too far off track, but I was wondering this earlier this week, like, was there an inciting incident for your love of movies, or was it just always there?
That's
like,
that's
is a there like a
really good question.
Like, was it like, did you bond with a family member over it, or like, what's your origin story?
Yeah, what's my origin?
Yeah,
this is good because I sometimes feel like my origin story culmination happens when I watch The Lighthouse. Mm-hmm. And okay, so that's the movie we're talking about today. But my origin story doesn't have like an amazing narrative. But what I think happened was my dad always loved movies, and mm-hmm. I always loved hanging out with my dad. And also, my family always loved movies.
Yeah.
We always love stories. Like, I think I've told you this before, but my mom once said, like, our family's drug of choice is stories.
Yeah.
So books, audiobooks, movies, media, TV shows. We just ate that shit up just all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, like, I tell this story a lot, too, when we were in Petoskey, because I lived there till I was about 4 years old. We would rewatch A New Hope, which at the time was probably called just Star Wars, like the VHS.
Yeah.
And it came to the point where my parents and our friend's parents said, you can't just continue to watch this. Why are you wanting to watch this again? So they made them write an essay on why they should be able to watch it again.
Wow.
So they wrote an essay and like printed it out and then like submitted it to my parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember one summer, my mom was like, you can't read Harry Potter again. You have to read different books.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my dad one time sat me down and was like, I was reading Peter and the Starcatchers at the time. This was a different instance. And he was like, look at your neighbor friend. He runs around everywhere. You need to do something other than reading. So I think I've always just
nerd.
Been, yeah, I've always been like one time I remember in like second or it was fourth grade, I think. I went outside because it was outside recess and we had these tires where they were hollow and you could like fit into one if you were small enough. So I fit into a tire while everybody's like playing around me.
Yeah.
And I'm just reading The Magician's Nephew. Like, I'm just like reading.
Yeah.
So I've always been like addicted to stories, but it didn't feel abnormal because my whole family was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think for me growing up, going to the theater was always like a treat, like mm-hmm. a really exciting thing. I distinctly remember like a few times where my dad did not tell us we were going to go to the theater, but oh, said yeah. to us like, hey, you know what we should watch?
Yeah.
And he was like, LLWW. And I was like, what is that? And then he gave us a few seconds and he was like, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Oh, I think just one L. But, and I also remember spontaneously going with him to go see Iron Man 2, mm-hmm. Which at the time was super exciting.
Wow. What a movie.
Yeah, exactly. And I got so, 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 so mad that my sisters could go see the first two Star Wars movies. One came out when I was 2 years old, mm-hmm. Phantom Menace. And then Attack of the Clones came out when I was like 5 years old. And I got so mad that I couldn't go see it with them that he let me go see Revenge of the Sith with them.
Yeah.
Which came out, I think, in 2005 or 6.
Yeah.
So I was probably 9. And that's the one where he gets, like, burned up by lava.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't remember being, like, scarred by that at all. I was just freaking pumped.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I literally made a stapled together, like, a paper flip book. Not a flip book, but, like I drew General Grievous. I drew R2-D2. Yeah. I drew all these people with my friend at the time, Jake Kalkman. And, like, that's how hyped I was. That's how...
Yeah.
So I almost got just, like, in... I fell in love with getting hyped for things.
Yeah,
and specifically
yeah, yeah.
movies.
Yeah. Man, I'm just like, I'm picturing that part where Anakin gets burned and you're just like jacked up, like 9 year old, like fist bumping, like. Yeah. It sounds like a little bit of like, yeah, they're like, it's part of your family history.
Yeah.
It also sounds like you were a little bit like ostracized for it, a touch, which like, that's a great way. Like, the best way to get somebody to do something is to tell them they shouldn't, right? Like,
yeah, that's interesting.
If you want a kid to read a book, ban it.
Yeah,
you know,
yes.
Like, tell them it's too dangerous to read.
100%, right? Yes.
And so, yeah, it sounds like there's a little bit of that.
I think my dad and I suffer from a similar affliction where we'll watch. I'm not like this anymore so much just because I like to come into movies more fresh, but I used to watch trailers over and over. And so, like, I was walking into Revenge of the Sith just, like, telling my sisters, like, remember when their lightsabers were going so fast?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. You know? I mean, of the three originals, you got to see easily the best one.
Definitely, yes. So. And I'll go to my grave happy that I got to see that one.
Yeah, if that theaters. Was your first Star Wars experience, that's a winner.
Yeah, right in there. Theaters for sure. Yeah. And then I was, like, super hyped for the 2015 Force Awakens, so...
Yeah.
I don't know if I was, like, ostracized for it, but I was always that weird kid who was way more into movies than other people.
Yeah.
And then in college, I was able to, like, find people who were similar to me, mm-hmm. and then I became better friends with them.
Man.
Yeah.
My first Star Wars experience was The Phantom Menace.
Oh, wait. How so? In theaters?
Yeah, in theaters as a kid. Yeah. And I remember being, you know, I was a kid... And walking out and be like, Jar Jar Binks is hilarious. And my dad was pissed because my dad grew up in the 80s on the original movies.
Yes.
And he was like, they ruined Star Wars. And I was like, what are you talking about? That was so funny. You know, he was mad and I didn't understand why.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
But I mean, my favorite Star Wars movie when I was a kid was probably Attack of the Clones. And like now I don't think it's that great, but... It's still entertaining, and yeah, he did make Jar Jar Binks for kids, so it was successful in that way.
It worked. Yeah.
It worked, yeah.
Every kid at school doing that impression.
That's hilarious.
For like a couple of weeks. Yeah.
That's good to know, because I couldn't remember that time at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I am old.
But I guess I would credit my dad, just because like I remember going to bed... and hearing gunshots from the basement because he's watching some World War II movie.
Mm-hmm.
And just being like, what's... Almost like banning a book. Like, you can't come down for these because you're not old enough.
Yeah.
Like, I remember they would put newspaper on our door that was made out of glass. Like, it was a window door. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it was because they were watching Return of the King. And I was like, I want to watch that. Yeah. I want to be in there. Uh-huh. And then I'd be like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom and like walk through the room and then see like one scene and then just imagine what the rest of the movie is like. Yeah. So really I think it was just like this, I don't know.
Yeah. It became this like treat.
Yes.
Like, yeah, there's something about forbidding something that makes it really, really appealing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That's funny.
And like when you're a kid, you cannot go to the theater unless an adult takes you there. So
yeah,
and that was pretty rare for me, so then it was like, wow, this is awesome whenever it does happen.
Yeah Man, that's good to know. We got some Isaac lore.
Yes that's
lore.
Me and I told you before we started recording, I was a little bit nervous for this recording just because I've always dreamed about doing an episode on The Lighthouse.
Yeah,
I didn't know what I was gonna say, and it's almost like meeting a hero, or I don't know, like it's like
you're fangirling.
This is finally happening. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I wrote down a little short essay.
Yeah.
That I'm gonna read to you if you're okay with that.
Oh, I'm so okay with that. In fact, I even Robert Pattinson's here to perpetuate your fangirling. Yeah.
Dude, if Robert Pattinson was here,
I invited him.
I do not know what I would do.
College.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know what I would do.
I you know those Omaze, like if you donate a certain amount of money, maybe you could hang out with like Mark Hamill or something like that.
Yeah.
There was one of those for Robert Pattinson, and I paid like $30 to $50. to be one of a billion trying to hang out with Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
I was like, the fates can decide if I'm going to hang out with him.
Yeah.
It was for the Batman, and I did not win, obviously.
I mean, yeah, he's got a little bit of that Tom Cruise factor for me, where I just have so many questions, and I'm so interested.
Yeah.
And how he, like, escaped being forever the Twilight guy.
Totally.
Like, that he has emerged as, like, a serious, legitimate actor. Yeah. After that being his first big thing is amazing. But
yeah, it is amazing. That's a topic we can go into more later.
Yeah, yeah. I want this essay.
Okay, so this is my essay about The Lighthouse. I saw a still of this movie before it came out, and something stirred in me. Ooh. I saw Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson in their period attire, staring toward the camera with an impressive lighthouse in the background. It felt historical, but to me, it felt spiritual. I knew I was going to love this movie. Like, I don't know why, but I just knew it.
Yeah.
So much so that before it came out, I wrote a letter to my sister and brother-in-law in California. And in that letter, I just was talking about what I was into at the time. And I was talking about the movie because I needed to share that I'm pretty sure... I just needed to share. And I'm pretty sure I saw this movie 4 times in theaters when it came out in its initial run in October. Then years later, I've rewatched it many times at home. And one year I even requested other people to watch it with me for my birthday. And I've also seen it when it's been re-released into theaters twice now, once at Wealthy Theater and most recently at AMC 18. Thanks to an A24 promotion. And it would not be incorrect for me to say that in the past 4 to 5 years, I have dedicated part of my life to this movie, a sizable chunk. I've spent hundreds of dollars on fan art of it, which is all hanging up on one wall in my apartment. I purchased it on VHS, DVD, and special edition Blu-ray, which I have with me now. And whenever something online or on social media pops up that is Lighthouse related or The Lighthouse related, people send it to me. And that's how you know you're obsessed.
Yes.
I even showed this movie to my future wife on our first official date after we visited a real lighthouse. And I am honestly not sure what I would have done if she had disliked it or hated it. Thankfully, she did not, and she enjoyed it, and now we're happily married. And I cannot fully articulate what this movie means to me or how much it has weirdly changed my life, but I do know that I am very grateful for its existence, and my life is measurably better.
Wow. It's a good essay.
Thank you. Nice. Man. I just love this movie so much.
Yeah. I can understand. I mean, just based on all of that.
Thank you.
Oh, we've got...
I bought this VHS from somebody on, like, the fan page.
Man, I didn't even realize that you could get a VHS.
Well, it's honestly pretty poorly transferred over. They just took the DVD and, like, transferred it onto the VHS and then made all of that themselves.
Yep.
And I have the DVD. And then this is probably the coolest one. It's like from A24. They have the Blu-ray in there, but they also have like some...
Like still shots.
Exactly. You do, like, and some art.
One of the first things I noticed about this movie is like there are so many moments where you're like, that would make a great photo.
Yes.
Like it's just really cool looking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Thank you. And
it's so funny how, like, when people find out you're really into something that's even a little bit obscure, you just get all the stuff. Like,
yes.
I get probably 4 to 5 bird TikToks a week.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And people will send them to me, and I'd be like, this is great. Thank you so much. You are the 5th person to send this to me. Like, you know that TikTok? Yes. With the mockingbird. Look, a mockingbird. At least 12 times I've been sent a version of that TikTok. And which, people are like, you like birds. This is you. This is for you.
I mean, it's a funny TikTok, but also yeah. that probably gets annoying after a certain point.
I mean, it's fine. I appreciate that people think of me.
Yeah, you know?
And most of the time, yeah.
Yeah.
But then, you know, occasionally people are just buttholes about it. Like, there's one where somebody points at, like, a hawk and is like, look at that blue jay. Mm. And that does boil me.
Oh, so they get you. They get your goat. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, but yeah. it's just, I feel like, feels like if you tell people you're a nurse, they're like, look at this rash.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so you got to be careful what you tell people you're into. Mm-hmm. But most of this stuff, unfortunately, is just from my own pocket. Like I've bought it. And the most stuff I get sent are like promotional things, or like, for example, they're going to release the screenplay, I think, today. A24, like a big book of the Lighthouse screenplay.
That's awesome.
They'll just do merch and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they overprice the crap out of it. Oh, yeah. But, you know, I don't really care if I'm supporting them.
Yeah. Because they make good movies.
Exactly. Yeah. So you got to be careful what you're into, but I happen to be happy. I'm into this, and I'm glad that you're happy.
Oh, yeah.
You're into birds.
Yeah.
Yeah, which this movie has some birds.
It does have some birds yeah. that play a central role.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Yes.
Well, should we do a summary?
Yeah, let's do a synopsis summary.
All right.
Do you want to do it or do you want me to?
I would be happy to. Okay. However,
no, please.
That makes me a little nervous.
Please. No. Okay. See, I'm very not critical of the way other people approach this movie. Like, one of my best friends who stood up in my wedding, he was one of my best men. He hates this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's a miserable experience for him. But I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
You couldn't marry him.
No, I couldn't marry him. But I don't want to. Right. Yes. Yeah. Right. So please.
All right.
Yes.
So the synopsis that I will give for this movie is you have Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe.
Yes.
And Willem Dafoe is this like old seasoned wiki or lighthouse keeper.
Yes.
And Robert Pattinson is new at it. It's his first time keeping a lighthouse. And they are alone on this island, and their job is to tend the lighthouse for a month. And William Dafoe is like, he's like a pirate, and he talks like a pirate.
Yeah.
And you can tell it bothers Robert Pattinson's character like almost immediately.
Yes.
And you can tell they're not going to be best buds, but they're stuck together on this island. And some weird things begin to happen pretty early on. There's this one-eyed seagull that starts to bother Robert Pattinson. William Dafoe's character won't let Robert Pattinson go to the top of the lighthouse to see the light. He's like oddly protective of that.
Yeah.
In an almost like cultish way. And there's sort of some illusion he might like be worshiping the light, or there might be something strange going on. And eventually it's their time to leave. And they get really, really drunk. But then a storm hits and the boat doesn't come. And so they're stranded on this island longer. Mm-hmm. And that is where the film really turns into, you don't quite know what's real.
Yeah.
You know Robert Pattinson's character is slowly losing his mind, and he blames Willem Dafoe's character for essentially like gaslighting him, but you as a viewer don't actually know what's real and what's not. He sees a mermaid at one point. And eventually, he devolves into madness, and I don't want to give away any more than that. But it's shot in black and white. It's shot square.
Yeah,
aspect ratio is
much.
It's really tight.
Yeah, exactly.
Skinny. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's set in the 19. When is it set?
I do think it's like either late 1800s or like turn of the century. So I would assume like 1890s, but that's something I should know. But
yeah,
it's not one of those movies that would tell you the year in a text that came on the screen. It might be somewhere on the logbook or something like that.
Yeah.
It might be 1870s or something. Because Winslow, I'm going to call him Winslow. And I'll call the other one Tom.
Yeah.
Or Thomas. Yeah. Robert Pattinson's character's name is Winslow for most of the movie. And Winslow, he was a logger. He was up in Canada area with like some... He names trees, which is fun, like white pine and tamarack and stuff like that. And that's just fun because... When I worked at Camp Roger, that's what the cabins were called on the girls' side. Just a bunch of tree names. So then when he was saying that, I was like, I know that. And he was like almost, I'm pretty sure like almost working in Michigan because I'm sure he was close to Michigan logging and stuff like that. So, and that's got to be when trees were like very bountiful and plentiful and right around that time where they were logging the crap out of them.
But I think like one of the things I think they did really well is like it's hard to give a summary of this movie because lots of
you did a great job.
Thank you.
Really a good job.
I do my best. but there's lots of this movie that's left really vague and unknown and like they don't fill in lots of gaps.
Yeah.
And I think that adds to sort of the creepiness aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Where like it's not a scary movie, but it's unsettling. Like the first time I watched it, like I had nightmares that night. But it's also
what your nightmares were about.
I don't remember.
That's fine.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly. I just remember waking up and being like, oh, that movie messed me up. Like, that was creepy. And it's just like you don't by the end you don't know up from down. You don't know what's real, and it brings you like that's Wilson's experiences like. He doesn't know what's real by the end.
Winslow?
And, but it's also a really funny movie, too.
That's like, what I wanted like, to say.
Like, it's so funny, too. Yes. Like, so much of the dialogue is hilarious.
Yes.
And, like, the awkwardness of just two guys living in a house together.
Yes.
It's,
One's working night shift, and the other's working during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you can see it from Winslow's perspective where he's like, this guy just sits up in the lighthouse all night doing nothing. And I'm working my butt off during the day, watching him sleep. And he just orders me around, calls me a dog, and just eats, you know, the food that he cooks, which tastes awful. And there's so many things that would be completely despicable about working here. And Winslow is just working here for money, and that's what he says.
Yeah.
And the further away you are from shore, the more money you get. Mm-hmm. And so the boat doesn't come back because the storms are so bad. And I'd love that you touched on the vagueness of this movie because that's what keeps bringing me back is the fact that it's ambiguous.
Yeah.
Because every single time I watch this movie, I'm like, is it Tom who's more at fault here?
Yeah.
Or is it Winslow who's more at fault here? Mm-hmm. Or old Tom versus young Tom? Because later you find out, you know, they have the same name. And when I was studying Romeo and Juliet in school at some point, they did this fun thing where they were like, who is the most at fault here? Is it Romeo? Is it his family? Is it the cop-out answer, society? Or is it, you know, this priest who helped him in the apothecary? All these things. And the point is that you could make a pretty good argument for most people in that play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really good writer because it's not obvious. It's not black and white. And for me, I'm like, wait, are the accusations that Winslow's giving to Tom true? Did he kill his second? Did he murder his previous helper?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's some evidence for that, and there's some evidence against that. And I just love rewatching this movie because it's a total comedy for me at this point.
Yeah.
Because the editing, the acting, the farting.
Yeah.
The, like all of the.
The goddamn frogs!
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like for most of this movie, Winslow's pretty quiet. He's pretty silent.
Yep.
He doesn't say much. But you can read on his face exactly how he's feeling. And if you've ever worked with somebody closely who's a generation or two above you, you can empathize with the fact that there's nobody there to like gym the camera, you know, like there's nobody there to like laugh about this later with. Yeah. You're just like stuck in this weird alternate reality where you have to deal with the rules of whoever has the authority, and it just so happens to be this crotchety old man who thinks he's a pirate, who like tells him the wrong, you know, stories that don't corroborate each other, like stories that contradict each other is what I'm trying to say. It's like when I was watching this movie, that Ewan McGregor movie, Big Fish. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
I hate that movie. Like, I hate that movie because it's all about how his dad is telling tall tales. I also watched it on a plane, and I probably was like, I think I might have been sick at the time. But I watched it on a plane. It's about his dad who's essentially lying to everybody about stories from his past.
Yeah.
But we're supposed to think that he's some great guy because he like believes in the power of stories or imagination or something. Like, it's literally called Big Fish because like
he's a liar.
Yeah, he's a liar. And in my brain, I'm like, I would hate it if my parent just told lies all the time.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Oh man, that's really funny. Yeah. I
think Big Fish sucks.
I haven't seen it. I remember it had like a little bit of like a
people
a
love that movie. Yes.
A little bit. Yes. And I know Tim I've Burton, seen it, but I don't remember enough to like have a strong
It makes me
opinion,
so mad because the main character, Ewan McGregor, at the beginning of the movie is like just like me, frustrated. But then by the end of the movie, he figures out like there's a sliver of truth to all of this stuff. Or yeah. I forget. I don't know.
Is the point that like it's okay to make stuff up if it's a helpful story?
Exactly. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just say it's a helpful story. But they refuse to admit they're lying. And it's like gaslighting. It's literally what Willem Dafoe is doing to Robert Pattinson.
That's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And the acting's next level in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good.
Like, everything's authentic. Mm-hmm. We talked about researching before you make a movie in Babylon, in our episode Babylon. And if we thought that they researched for Babylon, then, like, this movie researched tenfold because Robert Eggers, with his brother, they had this idea for a ghost story in a lighthouse.
Yeah.
And then he just spent years and years and years researching actual lighthouse keepers, looking in actual journals and seeing like what it actually was like to talk like that. And Robert Pattinson's accent supposedly is a pretty period accurate accent to the time from where he was from. And I will say Willem Dafoe's accent probably isn't super period accurate, but it fits so well because it's so telling of who his character wants to be.
Yes.
He wants to be this a Moby Dick, you know, Captain Ahab horse shit, you know? Mm-hmm.
He
wants to give off this vibe that he's a pirate who's weathered the 10 seas.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's this like wise old, you know.
Yes.
Like sage wiki.
Yes.
Yeah. And it, ugh, gosh. It, like, I love that after they discover they're essentially stranded until the storm breaks.
Yeah.
Like, up till that point, Robert Pattinson's character wouldn't drink. And then he's basically like, screw it, you know? And then the rest of the movie is them just exchanging drunken rants mixed in with like hugging and dancing.
Yes.
And then weird stuff happening to Robert Pattinson. Uh-huh. Like, it's just like those things intermix. And the drunken rants are just, I don't know if I want to advise people to watch it with the subtitles on or if it's better without, when you don't really understand fully what they're saying. But like, I was just looking up some of the rants, and it's like one of them starts because Winslow says that he doesn't like the cooking.
Yes.
He drunkenly admits he doesn't like the cooking.
Yes.
And Thomas, Willem Dafoe's character, gets like very nervous. He's like, you're fond of my lobster. And then goes in this, I think just reading it is great. It's
no, please.
Hark, Triton, hark. Bellow, bird, our father, the sea king, rise from the depths, full foul in his fury. Black waves teeming with salt foam. Smother this young mouth with pungent slime. And then later, the one we were referencing earlier about the farts.
Yeah,
it's just like, you think you're so damn high and mighty because you're a goddamn lighthouse keeper. And then he goes, oh man, I'm sick of your laugh, your snoring, your goddamn farts. Your damned goddamn farts. Goddamn your farts. You smell like piss. You smell like jism. Like rotten dick. When he yells, jism.
Yes.
Like that. The rants are so good.
Yes, especially that one for me is so cathartic because the whole movie, he's holding back. He's holding back. He's holding back.
Yep.
He doesn't say what he wants to say. And he'll just say, I, sir, I, sir, I, sir, I, sir. You know, just like having to follow the orders of this madman over and over and over. And he finally can let loose.
Yeah.
And
yep.
And he's like, he finally, Willem Dafoe, like, fires him. And he's like, you don't have to tell me twice.
It's
really funny. Because by that point, all hell is broken loose. Like, everything.
It's like, we're way beyond firing.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the fun dynamic is that Willem Dafoe is so self-serious most of the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes he'll warm up to Winslow. And then when Winslow says something he doesn't like, he'll, like, just snatch something out of his hands and say, like, you don't understand, like, you know, you're not working hard enough, you know, you're not doing your job. What was really cool is that the night before they're about to leave, they both drink, they're warming up to each other, and something I just noticed this time, and that's part of the reason why I love revisiting this movie, is because I notice things time after time. And they have swapped tobacco usage. So, Robert Pattinson is smoking a pipe, which usually Tom does.
Yeah.
And then Tom is smoking that little cigarette, which usually Winslow does.
Oh, interesting.
And then when he gets mad at him, he snatches the pipe out of his hand and throws the cigarette away. And I just think that's a cool, like, visual imagery of how they were warming up to each other, but they can flip on a switch easily.
Yeah.
And
that's really interesting.
And, Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe together, you can notice how different they are by the way they speak, not just in their accent, but their dialect and their diction. So Willem Dafoe will say, bad luck to kill seabird, but he'll call it a gull. And so, like, there's certain like coinage of phrases and what am I looking for? Terms that they'll have different. And the one the speech where Willem Dafoe says, hark, Triton.
Yeah.
That's like this weird flowery pirate, like Poseidon language. And Robert Pattinson's, his is very more off the cuff, gruff. It's not as Latinate, it's more Anglo-Saxon, and he'll swear more. And then after all of that, Willem Dafoe looks up at him and he says, you have a way with words. And it's almost like he just wanted him to talk to him after a while.
Yeah.
Like, he just wanted a friend.
Right.
But the hard part is, they are... Robert Eggers said that he wasn't trying to make a movie about toxic masculinity, but it ended up being a movie about toxic masculinity, because they cannot, once they start being friends, something bad happens and they, like, have to be antagonistic to each other.
Yeah.
So like, they're slow dancing and they're, like, about to kiss, which is fun to see Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe, like, blackout drunk slow dancing.
Like, as, thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah, as Willem Dafoe is, like, humming a soft romantic tune.
Yeah.
And then, immediately, Robert Pattinson, once that almost happens, he, like, puts out his fists and he starts wanting to, like, fight him. Yeah. And they start fighting.
Yeah.
And the whole reason why they started connecting with each other is because of alcohol.
Right.
And so there's so many instances of the fact that without their own, they're getting in their own way. Without their toxic masculinity, you know, they could probably work it out somehow. But they can't be vulnerable with each other.
No.
They cannot.
Without the aid of, like, lots of alcohol.
Yeah.
And
then
once they do, it turns bad.
Yes, it turns sour. Yeah. And then later they use it against each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, the whole, why'd you spill your beans?
Like, where will I? Why'd you spill your beans?
Yes. There's a lot of turns in the movie, and you talked about one turn where the movie goes down its insane road after the boat doesn't come and after they just continue to drink alcohol each day.
Yeah.
But another turn is where Winslow tells him that he let somebody die in front of him, or at least that's the way he told it.
Yeah.
Because he was working logging, and, you know, that's a dangerous thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And his foreman was also calling him a dog, just like Tom is. And his foreman slipped, fell into the logs, and was like, hey, help me out. And he didn't do anything. He just let him die.
Yeah.
And he stole his clothes and took his identity.
Yeah.
And
he spilled his beans.
Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. So that he's telling this to Tom. He's like, I trust you.
Yeah.
And then after that, just like it is now, there's like this silence.
Yeah.
That you don't realize you've been missing throughout the whole movie, because there's like fog horns, there's like the sound design, something's dripping all the time, the music's like blaring, just ambient noise is always happening, something's rumbling, like the machines are rumbling, and then like all the sound cuts out and you just hear,
it's just silent.
You just hear, and then you're like, the camera's moving through the hallway, and then Willem Dafoe's voice is like, why'd you spill your beans? And then, like, the ticking starts, and it's so great. It's so good. Yeah,
it's what a good thing to whisper.
Exactly. Yeah. And that scene, I think, is the closest it comes for me personally to being, like, a little bit scary.
Yeah.
But I think a good test for, like, if I'm going to be friends with somebody is if they watch this movie and they think it's a comedy or funny.
Yeah.
You know, if they think it's hilarious, then I'm like, yeah, we're going to get along.
Yeah.
But if you think it's, like, just unsettling, only 100% unnerving, then, you're not getting what it is.
Right, right. Yeah. It's both.
Yeah.
Well, I think that scene, watching it for the second time for me, because I went into it this time trying to figure out, like, okay, how much is Winslow losing his mind and how much is Tom just, like, lying to him or, like, messing with him or gaslighting him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a moment where I actually think Winslow is actually really losing his mind, and I actually trust Tom, Willem Dafoe's character, more, because he says, like, don't tell me. Like, don't tell me your secret. I don't want to know.
Yeah, he says that a lot. He's very emphatic.
Yeah, don't tell me your secret. I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. Don't spill your beans.
Yes.
And I'm like, a narcissist or somebody that was, like, trying to manipulate you would want to know your secrets.
Yeah.
Like, he would want to know those types of things and would be, like, really urgent for it. And the fact that he says, like, don't tell me your secret actually makes me trust him more.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, like, and, yeah.
Well, then, question for you. I can't remember if this happened before or after, but when he accuses Winslow of breaking the boat, this dinghy, do you believe him, or do you think that he actually broke the boat?
That's where I don't know. You know, like, after that point, I'm like, I don't know.
It's really hard.
At that point, Winslow has fully lost it.
I think, because
he's
so
trying to take a boat out into this absolute maelstrom.
Like, yes.
He's not going to get far anyway.
Probably not, no. But,
and he's clearly not doing well mentally at that point.
But what we see, you know, is Willem Dafoe breaking the boat and then Robert Pattinson running away, and Tom is, like holding the axe, and it looks like he's gonna like hit him and kill him. But then when you get into the house, the interior, he doesn't have the axe up ready to strike. He's like accusing him of breaking the boat.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just love how, like, if you had to answer the question, who's more at fault, Winslow or Tom?
Yeah.
Who would you say?
In the end, I would say Tom.
Tell me, why is some of your reasoning?
I don't know. I don't know. I think
it's a feeling.
Yeah, I think it's a feeling, and I think the movie alludes enough times that Winslow, Robert Pattinson's character, is having psychosis. Like he's imagining things and seeing things. That being said, I don't think the other character is not at fault. Like, I think he definitely does things wrong, but I don't see. That's what I don't know. Like that's and that's what I actually. I think the first time around, it bothered me at the end because I didn't. I wanted closure. Like, yeah, you want clarity, but I think going into it the second time, knowing I wasn't gonna get clarity on exactly what happened, I was more able to enjoy the ambiguity of it.
Because you can always chalk it up to the fact that the island might have an effect on both of them. You know, obviously the island, or maybe the lighthouse. You know, before they started drinking alcohol, he had the psychosis and all that stuff. So, and because he sees the logs. Oh,
the tentacles.
Well, yeah. And also, and also when he's like smoking down by the water, he sees the logs part. He sees the body of the man that he let die. And then he's underwater. He sees the mermaid.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
He did have that before. Okay.
So it's not just because of the alcohol if you're taking the movie at face value. But for me, I would have to agree with you that Tom's probably more at fault just because, oh man, like he has a superiority complex. And I mean, if you simply put, it's two guys. One is taller and stronger, younger. One's older, shorter, skinnier. Like just by that visual dynamic, sometimes that's all it takes for a a man to want to exert his power over the other person.
Yeah.
And he like says to him like, what brought you over here? And he's like, what do you mean? And Tom is like, pretty as a picture. Like, you're attractive conventionally. So why are you at a lighthouse?
Right.
And so maybe there's some jealousy going on there. But whenever he tells Winslow what to do, it's always in this like caustic, degrading, demeaning manner. Calls him a dog often. And so when I was watching this with my family, I felt like their tipping point was when Winslow makes him bark like a dog and brings him over to the grave and then digs, you know,
puts
him in the grave without killing him, but like, you know, he's putting dirt on him.
Yeah.
And that's like awful, degrading, horrible stuff. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it, for me, I sometimes am like, I mean, you kind of, you were asking for it a little bit. Like, you were calling him a dog. Yeah. You were, like, demeaning him the whole time. You're never understanding what he's trying to say. So, for me, my subconscious feels more aligned with Winslow. And we kind of are with him more from a camera's perspective. Like, even at the beginning, he's, like, checking out the... He's our fish out of water. Like, this place is new to him.
Yeah.
And he walks up the stairs, bumps his head, like, you know, and we aren't seeing the perspective of Willem Dafoe when he's entering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a timber man.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Oh, man. I would have loved, like, I almost wish that this could be, like, a stage play, because I would love to play either of them.
Yeah.
Just because the accents would be so fun, and Willem Dafoe, he like squawks and creaks, and like his voice is so iconic and good, and he's like, what? Timberman. And how long we've been on this rock?
Yeah, Yeah, it's...
Four weeks, 2 days, you know?
I hope the directors at some point, like, told him, lean into this.
Yes,
fully.
Yes,
and he was like, yes.
Yes. Well, I mean, part of the reason why Willem Dafoe signed up was because I almost said lyrics. The script had such a musicality to it. Like, mm-hmm. the words... nothing is taken out of context. Nothing is anachronistic. It's all within the world of 1872 or wherever this was.
Yeah.
So they're not going to say anything that's modern. The camera's not going to move in any overtly modern ways, mm-hmm. except for maybe trying to like depict the psychosis that we were talking about.
Yeah.
And yeah, they actually had to go through inclement weather, and they had buckets of cold water dumped on them, and you know, even though they're not actually drinking turpentine or you know,
the
vodka, whatever, the rum, whatever, they are downing all this water, and they're in harsh conditions. They actually filmed it out in Nova Scotia, and the light was so bright that on the mainland, people were complaining about the light from the lighthouse like beaming into their windows. And they were using a camera that wasn't from the 1890s, mm-hmm. but it was from like the 1920s-ish, I think. And therefore, the light had to be so bright to make it look like well lit in the scene. So as you're seeing them around the table eating dinner, the light looks, you know, bright, but it was blindingly bright, supposedly, on the set.
Oh, wow.
So just all of these things That's made it so it wasn't necessarily, quote-unquote, fun for them to film.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, by the end, it was rewarding to see what they had done with it.
Yeah, I am really impressed with the acting, because sometimes I'll watch a movie, and I think, I could do that.
Yeah.
Like, I watch a Marvel movie, and I'm like, I could probably do that, you know?
Yeah.
But there's no way.
No.
I could even come close. Because they have to carry this movie entirely.
Oh, my word, yeah.
With the dialogue and the facial expressions.
Yes.
There's not a lot going on outside of them acting.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, I can't imagine the amount of work they must have put into getting these characters right.
And even though they're technically not the only two actors, like there's the woman who plays the mermaid really well,
yeah.
and there's the man who played the actual Ephraim Winslow.
Yeah.
But
neither of them even have dialogue.
No, they don't.
The mermaid screams once.
Exactly. And so this is like a two-hander where
it's
literally just them. And a lot of times what I love about this movie is that they don't rely on the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not every scene has to be full of dialogue, but it's there when you need it, and it serves the characters so well. And it feels like The Shining to me in a way. Have you seen The Shining?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember much, but...
It's all right. It's weirdly similar because there's not, like, a clown who's the evil guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a presence. An invisible presence.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the camera is the presence sometimes, and that's sometimes how I feel about this movie, is that it's so well done because the atmosphere is the main character through everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they were able to shoot it in black and white and in the old-timey camera and in the aspect ratio, like all of these things come together to create this sum that is greater than its individual parts. And if it wasn't for a distribution studio like A24, you know, they might have had to compromise some of those things.
Yeah. Oh, you'd never get this movie approved
exactly.
by a standard, by Disney.
Exactly.
You know, there's no way.
Yeah. And I mean, even though I like The Northman a lot, you've seen The Northman, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely more Hollywood-ish.
Yeah.
But
big budget.
Yeah, it's got a way bigger budget. It's got bigger, more speaking roles for people.
Yeah.
Bigger stars and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I love that movie, but I'm just so glad that this is able to exist.
Yeah.
And it didn't have to compromise anything. Sometimes you watch a movie and you're like, oh, that ending's kind of weird, or that didn't really fit, or this would have been better if you got an actor who wasn't just a big name. And even though these are big name actors, like Robert Pattinson hadn't done Batman yet or anything like that. And you can tell how committed they are to their craft and how they fully just went 110% into what this was.
Yeah.
Like, no actor who has a big ego would sign up for a role where you have to masturbate and scream and, like, be humiliated. And, you know, you're, like, the worst person ever. You, like, kill a bird with your bare hands. And, like, you know, like, you're just...
Yeah, Dwayne The Rock with his I can only get beat up so much contract would never... come near a movie like this.
Or like Willem Dafoe having to fart on screen, you know, like that.
I wonder if they're real.
I want to know.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Let's call him.
Let's call him and ask him.
He's one that would be really fun to hang out with, I think.
Totally. Yes.
Yeah,
he'd have a million and a half stories.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I wonder how much of it I almost want him to be really normal.
Yeah.
Because then I'm more impressed by the acting.
I think he might be a little bit normal.
Yeah, just a regular dude.
It's weird how actors, when you stop and think about it for a second, they have kids, they have aunts and uncles and parents, and when they go to Thanksgiving, their family is like, you're not anything to me. Like, you know, like, their family's probably asking them, like, have you met Matt Damon? You know, I don't care about you. I know you.
Or if they feel like they have to put them in their place.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, hot shot actor. Exactly. I remember wiping your butt.
What's that line where... no prophet is welcome in his hometown or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. I think that is the phrase.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And it kind of rings true when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no matter how famous you get, your sister is not going to care.
Yeah.
About
not impressed.
No, exactly. Yeah. But how was it for you to watch it the second time versus the first time?
The biggest difference was it being in a theater as opposed to just at home on my TV.
Mm-hmm.
You feel the bigness and the loudness of it.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, I think what I really liked about it the first time was how quickly you get caught up in it.
Mm-hmm.
Despite how little is going on.
Mm.
I mean, it's black and white.
Mm-hmm.
It's small. Mm-hmm. And there's only two people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's... And, like, plot-wise... like, lots happens, but there's not a narrative. But you get really pulled into the world of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was even more impressed by that in a theater. And, going around the second time, I was much more able to... It was way funnier this time around. Because I was with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And B... you're just trying to, like, keep up the first time. In a weird way. Like, I know I just said there's not a lot going on, but at the same time, you're trying to keep up because about halfway through the movie, they start to throw a lot at you really fast. Like I said, it's this, like, there's these really long rants and then drunken dance scenes. And then weird stuff happens to Robert Pattinson. And it's just like bang, 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 bang. And you start to get jumbled and caught up in it. And I think the second time around, I was much more able to appreciate the humor of some of the dialogue and the scream. There's an iconic scream in this movie.
Perfectly cut scream.
Perfectly cut. It's so good.
And he's hungover.
He's super hungover. Yes. I feel like we could spoil this, right? Yeah. Like, so,
sure, yes.
Well, it's the first time they drink together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And because it's old school, if you have to go to the bathroom at night, you just do it in a pan under your bed and you take over the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Pattinson, like, has to go to the bathroom, but the pans are full of pee and poop.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sees him, like, drunkenly walking along this, like, rocky shoreline in a storm with pans of crap. And then throws them into the wind, and they come right back on him. And there's a pause
a big pause.
And then a scream, and it cuts off right before the end of the scream. And it is comedically perfect. Because if you've ever drank too much, you know how you feel in that moment. And then to have something like that happen when you were like not feeling well. Oh,
I just realized for the first time ever that his muscle memory was probably just like thrown in there. But the wind had changed. So now it's coming back to him. Yep. So it's like the funniest moment, one of the funniest moments in the movie, but it also makes sense with the plot.
Yes.
You know, that's amazing.
And we all know that feeling if you have no one to blame but yourself.
Exactly.
Like, it's the frustration of stubbing your toe. Yeah. And you're like, I want to hate something, but this is 100% my fault. I can't even invent a story where it's not my fault.
Exactly.
And he only has himself to blame.
And his scream is like,
it's like the deep inhale.
Yes. And it's not even close to what I just made out of my mouth, but it is one of those screams where you can tell it's beyond anything, any feeling. And he just goes for it. I love it.
Yeah. It was perfect. Yep. Just in the middle of this movie, just some good slapstick.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I think the last thing that I would love to get your thoughts on are, if you go to the like fan pages and stuff, they'll show you side by sides of a painting around that era, around that time, mm-hmm. and then a still photo of an image from this movie. So, for example, when there's that dream sequence where Willem Dafoe's like hulking naked with his hand on in the light, the hand on Winslow and the light coming from his eyes to Winslow's eyes, that's a painting from around that era.
Okay.
A very similar thing to
I
that.
Had questions about that scene,
yeah,
but
and
now that makes sense.
Like, they talk about Protean like Prometheus stuff all mm-hmm. the time, like mythology.
Yeah.
And you know, there's that mythology about, I think it was Prometheus getting his innards, his guts pecked by birds for eternity.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in
okay.
the movie.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of references to iconography, paintings, mythology, history, that are well researched and then inserted into this movie in a beautiful artistic way. And even just the changing of when he's punching Tom for a second, Tom is like crusted in octopus and barnacles,
yeah.
and he's got like maybe a crown of some sort, and
yeah.
so it's cool to rewatch so you can pick up on more and more and more things, like in the birds are the souls of dead sailors,
yeah,
and I'm you know the crab cage that he pulls up with the dead body in it,
mm-hmm.
he has an eye missing. And
yeah.
so does the bird.
Yep.
And so, like, there are all these connections where if you look closely, it's like watching Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz or
yeah.
The World's End, an Edgar Wright movie where the beginning of the screenplay has, you know, things that pay off,
mm-hmm.
set up and pay off in the end of the screenplay.
Hmm. That's helpful to know. And that stuff I didn't pick up on, other than I chalked most of that up to superstition.
Mm.
Like, I imagine it just like people of that time would be like people like piratey,
mm-hmm.
lighthousey folk,
mm-hmm.
Probably carried a lot of superstition, and they kind of wove a lot of that in.
Mm-hmm. 100%, definitely.
Yeah, but I didn't know the specific sort of mythology associated with it. So
I'll put a lot of that on our Instagram.
Yeah, I'm curious about it.
It's really cool to see, and if you're a fan of The Lighthouse, all of this will be something you already know. But it's just fun that I can watch this each time and get something new, because just like you, when I first watched it, I was confused about his job previously in the woods,
mm-hmm.
In the timber. and what happened to the, like, who's that guy with the blonde hair, the, like, bleach blonde hair, and why, what? And so when I get further and further into it, I can study the minute details, mm-hmm. and it's just such a rewarding rewatch every single time. Like, I could rewatch it today or tomorrow,
yeah,
and I'd be fine. I'd be this is awesome. Yeah. Because... Because you can get
you
into
have
the...
to read something else.
Yes, honestly, that's good for me to hear. I need that. But like, I was looking into the, just from my own point of view, like, what's the psychology right now of Winslow? Seems like he had a really bad dad, because he feels like he needs to prove himself, but he doesn't have the mechanism and tools to do that.
Yeah. I mean, certainly... just therapy head on. Yes. It's certainly trauma. I took that initial psychosis of seeing the logs in the water and the dead person in the mermaid as like a flashback. And then his sort of...
Totally.
Like, I just want to... His attitude at the beginning of, I just want to get through this. I don't really want to talk or be friends. Mm-hmm. His suspiciousness. Like, he has an inherent... He's very suspicious of...
Yeah, he thinks that Tom planted the little figurine of the mermaid on him, which was like a curse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think the incident with his previous job certainly like left a trauma mark on him, and you see symptoms of that trauma coming through. But outside of... So...
Yeah.
Therapy hat off.
Well, I just feel like... In that time, you never know how parents were, and they probably, some of them were pretty awful.
Yeah.
And it feels like the trauma was definitely in the accident, in the logging accident,
mm-hmm.
but it was probably also like a not so good upbringing. Mm-hmm. And it's really telling when he's doing his rant to Tom, and Winslow says... he says something like, you're not the president, you're not captain, you're not my father.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh, okay, he's got a chip on his shoulder about his dad.
Yeah, issues with authority and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Man. No, yeah, I gotta watch it again.
And he's always got a smoke with him. I love that, mm-hmm. because at the beginning he's like spilling his beans and he's saying, yeah, I mean, when the guy died, all I thought was I could really use a smoke.
Oh, yeah.
And then when Tom comes in and chops him on the shoulder, which I think is really good evidence toward like Tom's got a bunch of problems himself. Like Tom is not blameless whatsoever. Like he probably was gonna kill him. He's like, the light is mine, and then you know, he gets him.
Yeah.
And then he kills him, and immediately after he kills him, takes a smoke.
Yeah.
You know? And I can totally relate to that moment where he takes the keys earlier from Tom, and he's about to go up, and like finally he gets to experience this thing in the light, and he gets mm-hmm. to see the lighthouse, but he like looks in his pocket and he doesn't have his smokes.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want this moment to be perfect. I can't be without my smokes.
Yeah,
so then he goes back to get his smokes. And I could totally relate to that. I don't smoke at all, but like if you're looking forward to something, an event, a thing that you're looking toward for months or years, you want everything to be perfect. And, and you're going to go back and get something if... You know, if like Christmas or something like that, it's like, oh, everything has to be perfect. Like, if we don't have eggnog, it's not Christmas, you know, that sort of thing. And everyone's things are different.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, man. Mm. Well, any final thoughts on this beautiful, beautiful movie?
No, the only thing I would say in closing is similar to what we talked about with Babylon, is one of the things I appreciate about this movie is it gives you the feeling of, this is the movie they wanted to make, whether you like it or not.
Yes, yes.
This is the thing that they wanted to do and how they wanted to do it. And it wasn't made for lots of people to like it. And that makes me like it.
Exactly, yes.
The contrarian in me is like, heck yes.
Yes, and I think ironically, I think a lot of people love it because of that fact.
Yeah.
So it comes back around.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to take lessons from movies and I try to emulate what they've given us. So exactly what you're talking about. Like this movie gave an example of how to make a movie just from your own vision and you stuck to that vision. Mm-hmm. I feel like Star Wars never took the lesson from its initial first two movies. Yep. You know, let's make an original movie that is iconic because it has good characters and good writing. Well, I mean, most of the movies after that, they're iconic in their own ways, some of them, but they never took the like originality thing super seriously.
Yeah.
And that's why Robert Eggers, hopefully, I hope I'm dead if this ever happens, hopefully we'll never make a Lighthouse 2. You know?
Yeah, like, right. The Lighthouse cinematic universe.
Exactly. Like, yeah. I mean, anyway, that's a rabbit hole I won't go down, but like, there's such integrity in how this movie was made, and Robert Eggers as a director and his whole team. Jaron Blaschke is the cinematographer, and like, they collaborated really well. And so then everybody, the set designers, the costume designers, you know, the special effects, and everything came together to showcase the integrity that everyone had, where they were all pointed at the same goal. Mm-hmm. I just love that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just quickly, any music you're listening to?
You first.
I was going to say, I'm not listening to really that much music. I did make a playlist for my sister, which is a pretty good one. But that's old music. And I am now really into Rory Scovel.
Oh, yeah.
The comedian.
Yeah.
He's great.
I never got super into him, but I am aware.
I think he's really fun. He's got a new on Max, the streaming service Max. He's got a new one that's called like Sex, Religion, and a few things in between. And it's quite funny, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was in Babylon, which is fun. He was the count.
The count.
He was the guy who was giving out like drugs.
Yeah.
And yeah, anyway.
Oh, man.
Peanuts. The drugs were in the peanuts. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll plug what you sent this morning. Burb song.
Oh, yeah.
Just burb.
Yeah.
Is it B-E-R-B?
Something like that, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's not even... It's just nice. It's pleasant.
It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's on Spotify, too.
Okay. And what's the YouTube channel or a Spotify guy?
Oh, man.
Here, I'm
looking up Sharks with Legs.
Yeah, that was a great one.
Yeah, Justin Oval.
Yeah, he's great.
Sharks with Legs.
Sharks with Legs was fun because me and my friend Ethan Hone, we made a full podcast with four short stories called Mumble Brew. And the first one's called The Mag. And the whole story was about a guy stranded on an island and he found a community of sharks with legs.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, I don't know how old these videos are. Are they new or old?
I think they're newer, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, the videos look like old-timey video games.
Yes.
Like 8-bit or whatever.
Yeah.
And
like PS1.
It's just silly, goofy fun songs.
Exactly.
And one of them's about what if sharks had legs.
Yes.
And it's got like a Halloween-y sounding tune to it of like... Yes, this would be the end of you. If sharks had legs, that would be bad.
Just YouTube sharks with legs, and you'll find it.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate it.
Bye.
See you next week.